This audio program is brought to you courtesy of Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.
The Gypsy by Agatha Christie, adapted for radio by Doug Lucy, with Hilton McRae, Vivian Harbron, and Mike Fenton Stevens.
Do you believe in fate? My pal Dickie didn't. The things Dickie believed in were good, solid things. King, country, duty. He also believed that when we fall in love, our future happiness is ordained. Yes, rather a simple soul, my pal Dickie. Rest in peace. He'd always had this inborn craving for the sea, so his career in the Navy had been well chosen. I'd say there was something of the Viking about him, primitive and direct, a nature in which subtleties of thought were wasted. Not you might think the sort of fellow to be drawn into friendship with a brooding Celt like myself. But then, the threads of life sometimes draw unlikely bedfellows into the pattern, and being drawn, we must submit and take up our allotted place in the scheme of things. If, that is, you believe in fate. Dickie and I had been drawn together by love. His for the striking, beautiful Esther Laws. Mine for her infinitely truer and sweeter younger sister, Rachel, to whom I'd been engaged for approximately 1 year. With Dickie's engagement to Esther, we seemed to be drawn closer. But then, after a few brief weeks, the engagement was off again and Dickie was hard hit. When he came to see me, I sensed, an unburdening was coming. But to begin with, anyway, there was no mention of Esther. Only, it seemed, the story of some long-ago childish terror.
Whoa, thanks. Robert, do you ever dream?
Dream? Yes. Oh, I suppose so. Well, of course.
Do you ever have bad dreams?
You mean nightmares?
Not exactly, no. The thing is, ever since I was a child, my dreams have been haunted.
Haunted? By a ghost?
No. Well, sort of. By a gypsy. A woman who just appeared in any old dream, even a good dream. I'd be enjoying myself no end, and then I'd know. But if I looked up, she'd be there, standing as she always stood, watching me. With sad eyes, you know, as though she understood something that I didn't. I can't explain why it rattled me so, but it did. Every time. When we lived in the New Forest, I had a puppy, and one day he ran away out of the garden gate and along one of the forest paths. I came to a sort of clearing at the end with a rickety wooden bridge over a stream, and there, standing beside it, was the gypsy, with a red handkerchief over her head, just the same as in my dream. When I was scared half to death, I can tell you. And she looked at me, you know, that same look, as though she knew something I didn't and was sorry about it. A look almost of pity. And she nodded her head and said quite quietly,
I shouldn't go that way if I were you.
And I can't tell you why, but I was as scared as I have ever been in my life. I dashed past her onto the bridge, and I suppose the wood must have been rotten or something. Anyway, it collapsed beneath me, and I was pitched into the stream. There was a powerful current which swept me away, and I was nearly drowned. Never forgotten it. And, somehow, I felt it was all to do with the gypsy.
But she warned you not to cross the bridge.
I suppose you could put it like that. Anyway, I've told you about this not because it has anything to do with what's happened since. At least, I suppose it hasn't. But it's the starting point, as it were. It's what I call the gypsy feeling.
But what's this got to do with Esther?
Well, the Laws were old friends of my people's.
Right.
I hadn't seen the girls since I was about 7, but young Arthur was a great pal of mine. And after he died, Esther used to write to me aboard ship and send out papers. Awfully jolly letters she wrote. Cheered me up no end. I always wished I was a better hand at writing back, but anyway, I was terribly keen to see her. It seemed odd to know a girl quite well from her letters and not otherwise. Well, as soon as I was back in the country on leave, I went down to the Laws' place first thing. Sadly, Esther was away when I arrived, but was expected back that evening. I sat next to Rachel at dinner, and as I looked up and down the long table, a strange feeling came over me. I felt uncomfortable, as if someone was watching me. Then I saw her.
Saw who?
Mrs. Howarth, the one I'm telling you about.
I'm sorry, I thought we were talking about Esther.
That comes later. First, Mrs. Howarth. There was something about her quite different from all the rest.
Rachel, who's that woman over there? Dark, with a red scarf.
Do you mean Alison Howarth? She's wearing a red scarf, but she's not dark. She's fair. Very fair.
So she is, yes. I could have sworn she was dark. Must be the light.
I'll introduce you, if you like, when we walk in the garden after dinner.
Do you mean to say, Mrs. Howarth, that you actually believe in reincarnation?
I merely suggest it as a possibility. After all, while we exist, it's hard to grasp the fact that once upon a time we did not exist, and that one day we shall cease to exist. And perhaps that's because our existence doesn't cease. Perhaps we take on another form so that, who knows, while our outward appearance may change, our self, our being, is constant.
Well, it would certainly seem a jolly sensible way of accounting for how one seems to know some people right off, as if you'd met them before.
You mean lovers?
Well, I...
Dickie!
Yes?
Esther's home. She's in the drawing room and she's dying to see you.
Oh, righto.
You going in?
Yes. I suppose I better had.
I shouldn't go in if I were you.
I shouldn't go in if I were you. Heaven knows why, but she said it just the same as in my dreams, as though she knew something I didn't. As though she knew something was coming.
Second sight.
Do you think so? Anyway, I suppose it was rude of me, but I turned and left her. Virtually ran to the safety of the house because... And here's the thing. I'd been afraid of her from the first. Then, with a huge sense of relief, I entered the drawing room to see old man Laws and standing beside him, Esther. There was no question. From the moment I saw her, I was smitten. Really. Her slenderness, the black splendour of her hair and eyes. Oh, I fell hopelessly in love. And then a week later, we were engaged. It took her about a fortnight after that to find out she didn't care for me after all.
I'm sorry, Dickie.
It was the night before I was due to report back to my ship. I was walking to Esther's house through the woods, and suddenly I saw her, Mrs. Howarth. She wore a red hat, always red, like in my dreams. And I jumped half out of my skin, but something in her manner calmed me, and we walked along a bit, just talking.
Do you believe, Mr. Carpenter, that for every one of us there is another person destined to be our sole love and care?
No, I'm sure of it.
And what if, for some reason, we should fail to meet that person? Or we should meet them at an inappropriate time?
Well, then I suppose we shouldn't spend our life going round in circles, like a rowboat that's missing an oar.
Yes, I suppose we should. And how do we know when we have met that person? How do we know when we have encountered our fate?
Dashed if I know. It's jolly hard sometimes to know what one's feeling. Or whether one's feeling what one thinks it is, or... Oh, I'm talking rot.
Oh, no, you're not.
Well, this is where we must part.
Yes. You'll be home soon enough. I shouldn't go back too soon if I were you.
I shouldn't go back too soon if I were you. Then I knew that there was something terrible ahead waiting for me. And when I got back, Esther met me and told me that she'd found out she didn't really care. Her feelings were not as she'd imagined them to be.
Well, and, Mrs. Howarth, have you seen her since?
Never saw her again, till today.
Today? Where?
At the nursing home.
What were you doing there?
Oh, my leg. That piece of shrapnel still in my knee. The doctor's advised an operation. Nothing serious, he says.
So what's worrying you?
Well, just as I was leaving, I ran into a nurse wearing a red jumper over her uniform. A red jumper. And she said...
I wouldn't have that operation if I were you.
I wouldn't have that operation if I were you. Then I saw it was Mrs. Howarth. She passed on so quickly I couldn't stop her. Besides, I was shocked, rooted to the spot. Then another nurse came along and I asked her about Mrs. Howarth, but she said there was nobody of that name anywhere in the place.
You're sure it was her?
Oh, yes. You see, she's very beautiful. I mean, I'll have the op, of course, but just in case my number should be up.
Oh, rot.
What? Well, yes. Yes, of course it's rot. Of course it is. You see, she's very beautiful.
Something about the way in which Dickie spoke these words stayed with me. And I have to say, excited my curiosity. Who was this ghostly presence? This gypsy? This Mrs. Howarth? Was she real? Here was a man. I knew to have acquitted himself bravely in action at sea. You had seen men die, heard their screams. Yet I had seen real fear in his eyes when he told me about his childhood dreams and the curious effect of Mrs. Howarth upon him. The fear of a man who feels his mortal soul to be in danger. A man gripped by the hand of fate. If, that is, you believe in fate. 2 weeks later, when I heard the news about Dickie from the nursing home, I realized I had to speak to Mrs. Howarth.
Hello.
Good morning. Is this the Howarth house?
Yes, sir.
I wonder, is Alison Howarth at home?
She is.
And sorry, would it be possible to speak to her?
I'm sure it would, sir. Won't you come in?
Thanks.
Who shall I say is calling?
Oh, Robert McFarlane.
Right. And may I say what the business is, sir?
Oh, it's not strictly speaking business. I've news of a friend, that's all.
Right. I'll just get her.
Thank you.
Mr. McFarlane to see you, ma'am.
Mr. McFarlane?
You see, she's very beautiful.
Mr. McFarlane?
And she was very beautiful.
Yes, Robert. I'm afraid you don't know me from Adam. I got your address from the Lords. I'm actually a friend of Dickie Carpenter's.
I was going out. Up on the moor, will you come too?
Of course.
Who is it, dear?
An acquaintance. A friend of the Lords.
Oh.
We're going out on the moor, Morris. And then you'll have some lunch with us, Robert. Won't you?
Well, I'd be... Yes, thank you.
Good.
Let's make our way to those rocks. We'll sit there. And you shall tell me what you came to tell me.
What?
I always know when bad things are coming. Now, it is bad, isn't it? About Dickie?
Well, I don't know if you were aware, but he needed an operation. There was nothing too serious. The operation was apparently successful, but he had a weak heart. And I'm afraid he died under the anaesthetic.
Again. To wait so long. So long. What is it you want to say, Robert?
Only this. Someone warned him against having the operation. A nurse. He thought it was you. Was it?
No, it wasn't me.
He was convinced.
I have a cousin who is a nurse. We're very alike. She could easily be mistaken for me. It doesn't matter, does it?
What doesn't?
Oh, how funny. You don't understand. I thought you did. You should do. You look as though you have it too.
Have what?
This gift. Curse. Whatever you call it. I believe you do.
Sorry?
Look hard at that hollow in the rocks. Don't think of anything. Just look. Ah. You saw something?
I imagined I saw something.
What did you see?
Oh, just for a second. This sounds mad, but I saw it. Full of blood.
I knew you had it. 5,000 years ago, that's the place where sun worshippers sacrificed their victims. I knew that before anyone told me. And there are times when it feels as though I was there myself. Actually there, feeling as they did. And there's something about the moor that feels like coming home. Of course, it's natural that I should have this thing. It's in the family.
Is this the power to see things? I mean, before they happen?
Yes. Forwards or backwards, past and future, it's all the same. For instance, I saw you wondering why I married Morris, my husband.
Oh, honestly.
It's fine. We are an oddly matched couple, I'll grant you. Well, I married him because I've always known that there's something dreadful hanging over him. I wanted to save him from it. Women are like that. With this gift, I ought to be able to prevent it happening, if one ever can. I mean, I couldn't help Dickie. And of course, Dickie wouldn't understand.
I'm sorry,
There are two ways of living life, Robert. There are those, like Dickie, who live only in the present. People for whom every morning brings a new day, unlike any other that has gone before.
People like me?
I think not.
I can assure you, Alison, I'm just like anybody else.
No. You know, even if you're unaware of it, as yet, there is another existence. And time there doesn't merely stream past in a regular, even flow. Rather, it runs like a mighty river, deep and unpredictable, its currents and undertows likely to pull us in unexpected directions. And it sweeps us along, only to return us to the point we thought we'd passed long ago. And no matter how many times we drown, we never truly die. We go where we are taken, backwards, forwards, slaves of time. Robert, we have all been here before.
But if you're right...
I am right.
Well, then there's nothing we can do about our fate.
Precisely. We try and we fail.
That's pretty harsh.
Yes, it's a harsh universe. With perhaps one consolation.
Oh?
Love. The beautiful, all-consuming forgetfulness of love. You are in love, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
With Miss Laws?
Rachel, yes. So, do you know my future?
Don't you?
Why could I?
Did you ever have a dream? One that lodged itself in your head and never quite left you alone?
Dickie had dreams.
Yes, I know. But they frightened him.
Well, I never had anything like that.
Never?
No.
You never believed you were lost. Totally alone. A small boy wandering in a deserted landscape beneath a cold, indifferent sky?
No.
Then falling headlong into the earth?
No. Never.
Don't resist, Robert. Not what you know to be true.
Which is what?
We cannot change our fate.
Wonderful pie. Splendid.
Thank you. Have some more.
What?
Go on, you know you want to.
Oh, well, since you insist.
Robert?
Thank you. I couldn't eat another thing. In fact, I should be on my way before that mist comes down on the moor.
Oh, no. I've heard through. I mean, don't want to get caught in that.
Goodbye, Morris. It's very nice indeed to have met you.
Likewise, old chap.
Let me show you out.
Cheerio.
Au revoir.
Listen, I'm staying down at the inn for a day or so, and perhaps I could come and see you again. Tomorrow, maybe?
Of course, but...
But?
I don't know. I fancied that we shouldn't meet again. That's all. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I fancied that we shouldn't meet again.
I fell asleep with the words going round my head like wolves circling their prey. I dreamed I'd died and gone to hell. I could smell the smoke from the fires. And I awoke to see a cinder burning a hole in the hearthrug. Had I not woken, who knows? I realized I must go and see her first thing. That, I was sure, would break the spell.
Oh, Mr. McFarlane.
Hello again. Is Mrs. Howarth about, by any chance?
Oh, sir. Sir, you haven't heard.
Heard what?
Oh, Miss Allison, the pretty lamb. It were a tonic. She took it every night. Oh, the poor captain is beside himself. He's nearly mad. It were dark. He took the wrong bottle off shelf. They sent for a doctor, but it were too late.
She's died?
Oh, my pretty lamb. So sweet and gentle. Oh, she's upstairs if you'd like to. Would you like to go up and see her, sir? You knew her a long time ago, didn't you, sir? A very long time, she said.
Oh.
In the room, there was stained glass at the top of the windows. It threw a red light across the head of the bed. I took one long last look at Alison Howarth.
I've always known there was something dreadful hanging over him. I ought to be able to prevent it happening, if one ever can.
Ah, but you can't cheat fate.
A gypsy, with a red handkerchief over her head.
Nonsense. Imagination, nothing more.
I returned to my lodgings, afraid and confused. I was supposed to be at the Lord's for lunch with my darling Rachel, and I should have gone, but something wouldn't let me go. I poured a stiff drink to clear my head. And then another. And another. And before long, my thoughts were like Alison Howarth's river, swirling madly, first in one direction, then the other, uncontrolled and close to drowning under the weight of what had happened.
We have all been here before.
Surely. If she was right, then I had to accept the whole pointlessness of it all. That our fate is sealed. And that's all there is to it.
A small boy, wandering in a deserted landscape beneath a cold, indifferent sky, then falling headlong into the earth.
No!
But I had that dream. So often. And she knew. So was that my fate?
No.
I had to resist. I would struggle against the cold, indifferent sky. While I went up onto the moor to confront this thing. Where are you? Why are you hiding? You see, you were wrong about me. I'm not afraid, not anymore. Can you hear me? Can you?
Robert, old friend.
Dickie?
Come and walk with us.
I don't see anybody. Dickie, where are you?
I'm right beside you.
What?
You see, old chap, it's just as she says.
What's happening?
As she says. When it's time to go.
No.
When it's time to
no,
go.
It's not.
Come with us.
I can't.
But you're lost, old chap. Let me show you the way.
I am not lost.
Better be careful.
Show you the way.
You're at the edge of the gorge, old boy. You see?
I won't fall.
Let it fall.
We can't. Oh, there's no hope. I want to live.
We've all been here before.
No, there's no such thing as fate. My life is in my own hands. You have to let me go.
There is but one consolation.
Exactly. Love. I love, and I'm loved in return, and that's my life. You said so. My love gives me hope. Hope is stronger than all this. Let me go. Do you hear me? Do you hear?
Robert! Is that you?
Do you?
Please.
Robert! Over here, Mrs. Rouse!
Have you found him?
Yes, here he is. He must have slipped. Oh, Robert!
Do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Have they gone?
Who?
Oh, my Lord, what a state he's in.
Hope and love.
Robert, it's me, Rachel.
Rachel?
Yes. You've been missing all day. Where have you been?
I've been...
I was worried.
I was... Oh, somewhere else. Oh, I don't know. Seeing... Oh, ghosts.
Well, there's strange things to be seen on Moor. There's the White Lady, the Devil's Blacksmith, the Sailor and the Gypsy.
What? A sailor and a gypsy?
So they say, sir. Crossed in love they were. Long time ago.
What nonsense.
Yes, it's nonsense.
Darling, I think you've been drinking.
Oh, I'll say us.
A glass or two, maybe.
Well, maybe you shouldn't.
No, I shouldn't. Oh, darling, forgive me.
Oh, of course.
I've been... Oh, I don't know. In another world. I'm afraid I forgot you for a short time.
Another world?
Another... Oh, it sounds odd, but... A strange place. A deathly place.
It sounds thoroughly unpleasant.
Yes. Yes, it is. Oh, there's only one world we can be sure about, this one. Oh, God, will you hold me, please, sweetheart?
I think maybe you should get him back to the cottage. He really should see a doctor.
No. No, I'm fine now. I'm alive.
Well, of course you are.
I'm here with you.
Oh, forever, my darling.
Yes, forever. What happened to the rain? I was soaking.
It hasn't rained today.
You sure?
Of course I'm sure. Look, it's a clear blue sky.
Yes. I'm back, aren't I? Clear blue sky. Heaven.
In Agatha Christie's The Gypsy, Hilton McRae played Robert McFarlane, Vivian Harbron was Alison Howarth, and Mike Fenton-Stevens was Dickie Carpenter. Mrs. Rouse was played by Jenny Stoller, and Rachel Laws was played by Eleanor Tremaine. The Gypsy was adapted by Doug Lucy, produced by Bruce Hyman, and directed by Dirk Maggs. It was an above-the-title production for BBC Radio 4.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.